Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. A coalition of over 100 organizations will be participating in hands-off rallies nationwide to stand up against what they call destruction of our government and our economy for the benefit of Trump and his billionaire allies. In San Diego, a mass mobilization rally is slated to take place at the San Diego Civic Center Plaza downtown at 1200 3rd Street, this Saturday, April 5th, from noon to 3 p.m. Again, that's at the San Diego Civic Center Plaza. The National Hands Off organizers, who say they are committed to nonviolence, aim to take a stand against President Donald Trump and billionaire Elon Musk dismantling federal agencies, mass firing federal workers, and shutting down entire departments such as education and USAID under the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Their website, Hands Off 2025, states, "This is a nationwide mobilization to stop the most brazen power grab in modern history. Trump, Musk, and their billionaire cronies are orchestrating an all-out assault on our government, our economy, and our basic rights, enabled by Congress every step of the way," the site continues. "They want to strip America for parts, shuttering Social Security offices, firing essential workers, eliminating consumer protections, and gutting Medicaid, all to bankroll their billionaire tax scheme. They're handing over our tax dollars, our public services, and our democracy to the ultra-rich." The message concludes, "If we don't fight now, there won't be anything left to save." The organizations participating in the hands-off rally Saturday, or rallies nationwide, include groups that protect civil rights, women's rights, workers' rights, Social Security, the environment, immigrants, public education, health care, tax fairness, equality, science, clean food and water, consumers, and more. Now, locally, several groups have organized similar weekly protests in our region, including at several East County locations. Indivisible, a progressive group, is holding protests every Thursday at 11 a.m. outside Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon at the corner of Magnolia and Parkway Plaza Boulevard to protest against conservative Congressman Daryl Issa and the Trump-Musk policies, after Issa has refused repeatedly to hold a town hall. Another weekly protest against Congressman Issa is being held each Saturday at 11 a.m. on the Fuerte Bridge over Interstate 8 in La Mesa. Protests against cuts to Social Security and Medicare are being held at the La Mesa Social Security office every Thursday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Trump administration is closing many Social Security offices and yet forcing many applicants to come to a Social Security office in person, reducing phone support. And finally, Ramona Resist is holding demonstrations every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the intersection of Main and 10th Streets in Ramona. Everyone is welcome as long as they agree to rules requiring nonviolence. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show here on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. We are very honored today to have on our show as our guest Nora Milner, a San Diego-based immigration lawyer with Milner and Markey. Welcome to the show, Nora.
Thank you.
We appreciate you taking the time to join us. Under the Trump administration, we have seen a massive immigration crackdown, including mass deportations, a growing number of raids, including one in El Cajon just days ago, and even non-undocumented immigrants, people with protected status, being targeted. So I'm curious, as someone who's been practicing immigration law since 1987, what are some of the major changes that you're seeing, and how is this impacting the folks you represent?
Well, Miriam, the biggest change that we have seen is the complete lack of due process. The Constitution provides due process to anyone who is in the United States, regardless of their immigration status. And before this administration, in January of this year, we could regularly and confidently advise our clients that if they were detained, they had rights to see an immigration judge, to pursue certain types of remedies that are available in the immigration court, including a program called cancellation of removal, which is for individuals that have been here 10 years and have family, U.S. citizen resident family, and can show hardship. They have a path to residency through that program, as well as other court-created mechanisms. And they had a right to counsel. Most of them have a right to bond if they were held. And so the biggest change that we have seen is in our industry today is the complete lack of due process. ICE officers today, most ICE offices have a quota of approximately 700 arrests. We believe that's to the best of our knowledge, we believe that's a monthly quota.
Wow.
If ICE officers do not meet their quota, they are reprimanded by their supervisor. So there is a huge push to target any individual, regardless of their status. We have many individuals in the United States today that are here under temporary protected status under a number of programs. We have individuals who have filed for residency. For example, my client who was summarily deported in January, right after President Trump took office.
And he was sent to Mexico, you've said,
right? He was returned to Mexico. He is married to a U.S. citizen, and we were working on his paperwork, and everything was pretty much in order. That's one of the biggest changes is that in the past, if someone was, the policy memos were that if someone was within technically 90 days of eligibility, residency, which all permanent individuals who are either parents of U.S. citizens, spouses of U.S. citizens, or minor unmarried children under the age of 21 are technically eligible within 90 days for residency, could not be removed. That's been swept away. So every potential due process, right to a hearing, right to counsel, right to challenge the evidence before them, right to cross-examine witnesses, all of the rights that we take that are sacred have been taken away from them. And the sad part is that in reality, no one is safe at this moment. Anyone could be swept up in a raid, and including U.S. citizens.
Yeah, we just saw someone swept up and it wasn't a raid, I guess, but he was sent to that infamous prison in South America, El Salvador.
Yes.
And he was not a Venezuelan gang member. He was not Venezuelan at all. In fact, he was a Salvadoran who was not supposed to be deported back to that country. Now the Trump administration is claiming they can't get him back. Oh, well, too bad. You just rot this hellhole for the rest of your life, perhaps.
And they can get him back if they want to. It's very simple. All they have to do is make a request to the El Salvadoran government, and they'll return him. That's a done deal. They just won't do it.
If we can get hostile foreign governments to return hostages, you know, it's whatever it takes, you would think this could be done if they really wanted to do it.
The racial profiling is probably the biggest violation of the Fourth Amendment that we're seeing today. Anybody that is Hispanic looking, anybody that is Indian, meaning Middle Eastern, any of the ethnicities are all great targets. You know, blonde hair, blue eyed, quote, you know, North Americans are probably not likely to get swept up. So it's an egregious violation of the Fourth Amendment, which is to protect you against unreasonable search and seizures and to have probable cause to stop and search. And probable cause does not mean you look Hispanic. Probable cause has to be based, as the Supreme Court says, on the belief that there is, quote, a crime afoot. And just because you're walking out of the store, the 7-Eleven, and you happen to be Hispanic looking, does not mean that you've committed a crime.
So let's talk about those rights. Let's jump into that right away. What advice would you give to an undocumented person or anybody else, since they seem to be targeting lots of people? If ICE shows up at your door, or if ICE stops you on the street or at the store, to what degree do you have to cooperate with them or not?
Okay, well, let's first let's break the classifications up between undocumented and those who have residency or other protected status. If someone is undocumented, we are giving out what's called the red card. The red card is a little small card that they can carry in their wallet or their purse. It has their rights in both Spanish and English, each side. And we're giving those out to all of our individuals who come for consultations.
If you could send me a copy of that, I'll put it
Yes,
up on my website
we will be
along
happy
with
to
this interview.
provide that to you as soon as possible. The red card gives them quick access to their rights. Their rights generally are if they are at home and so and ICE comes to their door, they do not have to open the door. They have the right to keep that door closed. And if ICE says they have a warrant, it has to be a federal warrant. It cannot be an administrative warrant prepared by ICE. It has to be a warrant signed by a federal judge, generally for the commission or belief of commission of a crime. And the individual can ask that that warrant be passed under the door for the individual to look at. They do not have to open their door. If they open the door, then clearly they have waived those rights. If they are detained on the street, if they're detained outside their home, we are advising clients, first of all, to remain silent, to make no comments, to refuse to sign any paperwork. However, if they go from being detained to being arrested, then we're advising the client to present evidence that they have been in the United States at least 2 years, and that hopefully will prevent their immediate expulsion. That is can be something like a letter from their pastor. It could be a school record. It could be a utility bill is what we generally advise clients to take something innocuous like that. We've advised them not to carry or present birth certificates or marriage certificates, anything that provides personal information. And provide that. And hopefully that will at least at a minimum give them an opportunity. If they go into detention, then give them an opportunity to see an immigration judge and then pursue their rights from there.
Yeah, I wondered about. I know at the raid in El Cajon last week, one of the people picked up and detained was a man who's been here for 4 years, undocumented, but he's been here for 4 years, working there for 4 years, has a wife and several children here.
Yes, yeah. And so again, you're right. I mean, just the attitude of this administration is to shoot first and ask questions later. So unfortunately, we can only advise our clients of their rights and then prepare them and arm them as best we can to understand their rights. In terms of permanent residence, we always advise them to carry their permanent residency card. If someone is on temporary protected status, to carry a copy of their TPS approval notice. If someone has filed for residency or some other benefit, they should carry a form I-797C, which is the receipt from the government, anything that shows that they have made an effort to legalize. And in most of those cases, it might be sufficient to detain the government long enough. They cannot remove a lawful permanent resident without due process. A lawful permanent resident has all the rights of a U.S. citizen except they cannot vote, and they could be removed for the commission of certain crimes, but they have all the due process rights, and they cannot be removed until the highest court in the United States takes away that permanent residency, and it cannot be removed by an ICE officer has no authority to take away someone's residency. So
That's helpful. Yeah.
that's important for them to know that. We're also, our office sends out a quarterly bulletin in both Spanish and English, advising our clients of what's happening with the law. It's a free bulletin and it goes through to their email. We recently put out a four-page bulletin, for clients to make arrangements for the custody of their children. This is something that
That's
people
terrifying.
haven't given enough thought to. What will they do if mom and dad are removed from or taken into custody? They have to be thinking about who's going to take care of their child, who's going to pick up the child at school, who's going to get the child, to the doctor, whatever,
Yeah,
take
this
care
is
of their child.
heartbreaking. We're hearing these stories of them picking
Yes.
people up in front of the children, leaving the kids
Yes.
screaming in the back seat of the
Yes.
car with like not even making sure that there's a responsible adult looking
Exactly.
after those
So
kids.
this is a four-page bulletin in both Spanish and English. It advises them of the various laws under the state of California for them to create temporary custody, for them to look at all of these legal issues. So the most important thing for individuals who are listening to your program is for them to please seek counsel. Go and see an immigration attorney who's qualified,
Yeah.
who can help you through this crisis right now with
What
American.
if they don't have money and they're worried they can't afford a lawyer? Are there any sort of pro bono?
Many of us do pro bono. Our office is again, we send out these bulletins and information free of charge. All they have to do is get in touch with us and give us their email.
And
And
how do they reach you if someone
well, they
wants
just
to?
call our office. Our office at the number is 858 451 6269. And they can ask to be placed on our email bulletin list, and we will provide that information to them free of charge. And they'll get it directly in either Spanish or English to their email account. And
That's
that is
great.
also an opportunity for them to stay in touch with an immigration attorney to get advice and then perhaps set up a consultation to meet with us at a later time.
Now that President Trump is coming out and ordering that all undocumented immigrants must register with the federal government or face serious penalties, fines, or I think even criminal penalties. And yet, of course, if you register, that makes it easy for them to find you and potentially deport you. What are you advising your clients to do, your undocumented clients, regarding that?
Miriam, this is a real ethical dilemma for us because the registration program is indeed legal. It was initiated as during World War II when the United States was concerned about the presence of foreign nationals, primarily Japanese.
Under the Alien Enemies Act.
I'm sorry,
Was that under the Alien Enemies Act?
yes, that's
Yeah.
correct. And in 1986, however, when President Reagan signed in the Immigration Reform and Control Act, which is more commonly known as amnesty, he eliminated the registration program because he said it was contradictory to the amnesty program. He urged, because we were urging people who were undocumented to come forward and register, we had to eliminate the penalty if they did so.
Yes.
So that law has been dormant until now. Is it a requirement? Yes. Our office is taking the position that at this time it has not been fully implemented. It is almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't
Oh,
problem.
yeah.
And we're walking that ethical line carefully. We clearly
Are there
cannot
any
possibly.
plans to challenge that you've heard of?
Not, we have not seen any litigation against it because the program is in fact federal law. However, we are again monitoring the ethical issues regarding the registration. We cannot legally advise clients not to comply with the law, but by the same token, we are looking at it to determine what aspects we might be able to cushion, I guess. At this point, I've got to tell you that it is an ethical thorn in our side, and we are walking a careful line to make sure that we do not advise clients to break the law in any respect.
Yeah. It really must be difficult to be an immigration lawyer these days. And then with the Trump administration threatening lawyers now, are you
He did.
concerned about that? About that they could you could be targeted for simply
Yes.
trying to help your clients within
Yes.
the bounds of the law?
Yeah, we are concerned, and that's the reason that we are cautious about discussing our cases. We are very, very careful about shielding our clients, potential clients, from any retaliation. And it's the first time as an immigration attorney, I will tell you that. Yeah, we're all concerned. We're all concerned for our own safety, concerned for the safety of our families, because we're just trying to do what our job is, which is to uphold the Constitution across the board. And we were very concerned and dismayed that this administration would target us for just trying to do our job. We're not working against anybody. We're just trying to uphold what we believe are the rights that are, inherent in our system. And I think every American citizen should want that to be the case, because if they, there's the old saying, when if we don't stand up, if you don't voice your opposition, who will be there when they come for you? And so
Exactly. I mean,
it's
we're
the way
really
it goes.
seeing tactics of an authoritarian
Yes.
regime here, not what one would expect in a democracy.
And I will tell you, Miriam, I really believe in the goodness of the American people. I believe that the voices of the American people are being heard and being shown in their peaceful demonstrations. And we get a lot of calls from good people who have their nanny or their housekeeper. Or I'll tell you another area that really concerns me. Many of the childcare, or not the childcare, but the caregivers in this country believe it or not, many of them are undocumented.
Oh, I'm
It's
sure. Yeah.
area of our system. It's an area, we do not have a visa, believe it or not, for individuals to come here and be caregivers. And yet we are. And so instead of offering them an opportunity to legalize and have at least a work permit to help care for the graying population of this country, we are deporting them. I was in the bank the other day, and there was a woman, an elderly woman in a wheelchair being pushed by an Hispanic caregiver. And she was speaking for her and helping her with her banking needs at the window. And it got me thinking, you know, what happens? The chances, the reality is that probably that woman who was taking the young lady that was taking care of the elderly woman, chances are she was undocumented. What happens to her? What happens to the elderly woman in the wheelchair if her caregiver gets deported?
Can you
Who will
imagine,
take
or
her?
a senior with
Yes,
dementia who may not even know how
exactly.
to call for help?
Exactly. And many of the people that come to see me say, listen, my mother is so bonded with her caregiver. She can't go to anybody else. She might, the caregiver, you know, let's say it's Maria, takes good care of her and they love each other. And I can't find anybody else. What can I do to legalize Maria? And sadly, our country has turned its back on this desperate need for this caregiver industry. And so, you know, we
Absolutely.
could easily resolve that dilemma by creating a non-immigrant visa for these individuals to have the ability to legalize here, work lawfully, put into the Social Security system, pay taxes. We
Absolutely.
have the mechanism. We could
Oh,
create
yeah.
the mechanism.
We could see
We
that
could
across
solve
so
that.
many industries. I mean, the farm
Yes.
industry is being
Yes.
devastated. Look how many of I've read that like 70% or more of the workers at California farms are
Right.
undocumented. And who's going to pick the crops? Are they just going to rot in the field? And we'll all pay more for food if they do find Americans to do that work, which they probably won't.
And again, you know, I've written a number of treatises on this issue that, you know, how can we, I've been asked many times, how can we work to solve the problem at the southern border regarding asylum? My experience is that the majority of the people who come to our country through the southern border, in addition to fleeing persecution, they just want a place that's peaceful and they're willing to work. We could
Right.
create a non-immigrant working visa for these individuals to be vetted, come through our system, get a non-immigrant visa that would allow them to work, let's say for a year. As long as their person's a good moral character, then we could renew their visas after a year, give them then temporary residency, say for 5 years, if they remain good members of the community, and they work and they pay taxes and they hopefully assimilate and learn English, then they could become permanent residents. In other words, there are pathways to help with the immigration problem.
Yes,
But
and
it's not.
pathways for citizenship, you know, ideally, if people have
Exactly.
been here a long time and
Exactly.
been, you know, hardworking people
Yeah.
of good character. But sadly, I mean, for decades now, it's the Republicans in Congress that have blocked
That's
comprehensive
correct.
immigration
That's
reform,
correct.
and we haven't had amnesty since Reagan. So anyone who came here undocumented since the 70s has no legal pathway, no easy legal pathway, you know, to
That's
citizenship. I mean,
correct.
do they or can they? If someone came here in the 80s or the 90s and they're
No,
not
in the
married to.
80s, no, but we do have an old program which we haven't seen many people qualify for it as a result of amnesty, but there is a program called Registry. If someone has been here since January of 1972, continuously, they can register for residency. As a result of amnesty, most people didn't need to do that. They jumped into the amnesty program. But there are occasional exceptions that we can find. There are people, believe it or not, I've represented a number of clients who were U.S. citizens and didn't know it through the derivative citizenship program. In other words, one of their parents or one of their grandparents were U.S. citizens. So I've been able to stop deportation. In fact, a quick side story is that one of the judges sitting in the California Superior Court today was a result of was in a family where I was able to establish that her parents were you her father was a U.S. derivative U.S. citizen, and as a result, we kept her family here, and she's now a Superior Court
Oh my
judge in
goodness.
California. So there are stories like that, and there are people, because we live so close to the border, there are people who could be U.S. citizens and don't know it, so they should at least see some review of those issues with qualified counsel.
Interesting. Besides undocumented immigrants, as you referenced, Trump has been targeting or threatening to target other groups, such as those here on protected status visas. For example, the Afghans who helped our troops out as translators. A lot of those are right here in East County. Haitians. I wonder about the Iraqis who helped our troops. I'm wondering, are you working with any clients in those types of situations? And it must really be striking fear into the hearts of these folks.
Yes, I am. I've actually immigrated over the years, many, many Afghans. I am working with a number of Afghan clients. And recently filed residency for two young gals who came over who were paroled in 2 years ago through the Afghan. They were the, their story of being put on an airplane, the two of young girls, and separated from their parents is quite horrific. But fortunately, they all made it to the United States, and so they did get asylum. So we're filing for their residency now. But yes, I've worked with Afghans. I'll tell you, the group that is sad is the For You For U4U program, the Unity for Ukrainians. Their program is being eliminated. Now, I believe, and again, we're all operating on a daily basis, almost like we're in a legal blender going around and around in circles. But my latest information as of a couple of days ago was that a federal lawsuit was filed against the administration to stop the termination of the TPS and the humanitarian parole programs. And we're waiting for the judges to a judge to decide if
Is
they'll
that
extend.
specifically for the Ukrainians or is that
Yes,
broader?
the Ukrainians, the humanitarian parole program for Afghans, and several of the other groups.
Yeah, where would they send a
Haitians.
Ukrainian who's deported back to an
Yeah.
active war zone? It's
Right.
really mind-boggling.
And the CHNV program, the Cuban, Haitian, Nicaraguan, Venezuelan program. Those people have nowhere to go.
No.
Cubans, I'm working a lot with a lot of Cubans now, which is interesting because in the past we rarely saw Cuban clients in San Diego. They usually wound up on the East Coast in Miami, but many
Interesting.
of them now come through Mexico, and we're working with the Cubans. I'll tell you one point too that I want your public to be very aware of, and they should absolutely contact their congressman about this. There has always been, for many, many years, we've had a program called Parole in Place for military. It is a way for spouses, children, and parents of either active duty, retired, or even deceased military personnel to have a mechanism to legalize their status in the United States. And the PIT program, Parole in Place for Military, has been very successful. I've used
Right.
it for
So you're
many,
talking
many
about,
years.
say, an immigrant, an undocumented immigrant who has served in our armed forces, fought for America,
Oh
and
no, let's say the individual is a U.S. citizen who is in the military, but they have an undocumented spouse or an
okay.
undocumented parent or child. The
Very
military,
common. They go over and maybe marry someone they've met overseas and bring them back.
And the military parole in place has been a mechanism for us to be able to legalize that family member here. I've even done it for individuals who have military members who are deceased. And we've been able to do the PIT program for their parents. So Trump has now tried to eliminate the parole in place military. I would hope that your audience would contact their congressman and representative and really voice a strong opposition to that, because that is absolutely a slap in the face to our veterans. And that's something that costs our administration nothing. There's no cost to our government, and it is a valuable program that too many people are not even aware it exists, and we're fighting desperately. He tried to eliminate it in his first term. We were able to convince them not to do so, and it appears he's trying to do it again. And so
Yeah, there
I would
seems to be
hope.
no rationale for that
No,
other
there
than
is
just
none.
blind
There is
racism.
no
We're not targeting
rationale.
criminals or potential
Exactly.
criminals.
Exactly. And many of these people are their children. You've either, I had a couple of parents who their son died in one of the Iraqi war, and we were able to legalize them. I mean, those are individuals that have survived, the military, and our military personnel have given their lives sometimes, or they've given their limbs, they're amputated, whatever. There's no reason to close the military PIT program. So I would encourage again your audience to please take the time to call your congressman, your senator, and say, listen, please do not allow the administration to terminate the military PIT program.
And if you don't know who your representative is, if you go to our site at eastcountymagazine.org, we have a section, our Take Action section, Citizens Action Center, where you can go in and we list all the members of Congress, and you can go in and find out where your district is and how to contact those individuals. We need to pause a moment for station identification. You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. The Trump administration, as we've been discussing, has been defying, the law in a lot of cases, most notably refusing to turn around an airplane taking detainees to that, torturous prison down in El Salvador, defying a judge's order. So I'm curious, in your experience, are you still able to get access to detainees, such as, say, at the Otay Detention Center? Are they being responsive to your legal inquiries or judicial orders that have come through your office?
If they're detained and put into custody, yes, we can get, we can then, they have then the due process rights. We have the ability to get before an immigration judge, maybe get a bond. So if we're able, I mean, at this point, it's sad to say, but we hope if one of our clients is arrested, we hope that they do get detained. Our fear is that they won't be and that they'll just be summarily removed from the United States. Mm-hmm. Once they're removed from the United States, we only have two options. We file a habeas corpus in the federal courts to get their basically returned to the United States. And then even if we're successful with habeas, we then have to go through all the hoops and logistics of physically getting them back. The people that are stuck right now in the El Salvador prison are, to my understanding, there have been no successful habeas petitions completed yet. I'm sure there are many that have been filed by the ACLU. And the question will be, how much pressure can we put on the administration to acknowledge that a good portion of those people who will probably remove to El Salvador may have absolutely no gang affiliation. I can tell you that.
No, and even if they did, they're supposed to be entitled
to due process. That's correct.
Let a court here decide whether they should be deported or not.
So the reality is, again, the administration is, shoot first and ask questions later, which is, we're going to do it, and if you don't like us, sue us.
Yeah, and we're hearing that they were picking people up. They were claiming it was, a gang symbol. If you had any kind of a tattoo, some of these guys mm-hmm. supposedly had, their mom's name or something on their grandma's or roses, and they were calling these gang symbols when they really weren't. So it's
well,
really
the prevalence of tattoos today is
everybody. Yeah, exactly.
As many years as I've been practicing, I can tell you that 20 years ago, the U.S. consulate, particularly the one in Ciudad Juarez, was all in a flurry about tattoos. Oh, my God, so they would send
My daughter has tattoos.
Tattoo.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah, they would send a picture of the tattoo to their Washington, D.C. database to see if it was, gang related. They finally have had to stop doing that because 99% of the people today in this country, particularly the younger generation, all have tattoos. So, that's... Just because somebody
so many of our own
doesn't mean they're a gang member.
Sailors and military have tattoos.
Exactly, exactly. So, the prevalence of the tattoo or the presence of it is not equal.
Yeah, unless it's an actual gang symbol,
Exactly.
And even then, did somebody know that's what it was when they got the tattoo,
Right.
I'm curious whether you've worked with people who have actually had their citizenship threatened or lawful permanent residents who've been threatened with having that revoked. Can you give examples?
Yes, I am. I am actually working with those cases. I'm careful about discussing those particular cases at this time. I can't do that.
Yeah, okay. I understand.
I will tell you that both residents and U.S. citizens are a concern to us in terms of their security. Yeah.
Wow. So this could be anybody, really. This
yes,
could be anybody.
Yes, yes, yes.
Terrifying. We're now seeing people returning to the U.S. who've traveled overseas or abroad, mm-hmm. Going through horrific experiences, strip searched, shackled, detained sometimes, this sort of thing. Even people from Canada, from Germany, are you seeing a fear of travel among your clients?
Absolutely. In fact, we have prepared a kind of a boilerplate email to all of our clients who have immigrated to residency who are fearful now of international travel. We got so many calls, we literally couldn't field them all. So we prepared a, we take, we'd get their email address and we've sent them out an explanation of the things they should carry with them. Including, in, of course, in addition to their permanent residency card, receipts, any documents that establish their return to the United States. For example, if they're permanent residents and they've been out, let's say, of the United States for 2 months, they should carry proof of their home, their lease, their mortgage, pay copy of their taxes, anything to establish long-term contacts to the United States. Any resident who has immigrated who had a criminal matter, we are advising them to be sure to carry copies of the criminal disposition. But in the end, we're telling clients in this email that by and large, because things are so unsettled and so unpredictable, if international travel can be avoided, probably it's a good idea at this time. Any international travel that is unnecessary, they should really reconsider. And that's really sad. We have some Canadian clients who immigrated from Iran or Afghanistan through asylum there, got asylum in Canada, became landed immigrants, and then eventually Canadian citizens or immigrated to the United States here as residents. They're probably going to be looked at and really have a hard time at the port of entry, even though
and
they're...
How ironic it should be noted that Elon Musk, who is South African by birth, came first through Canada and
That's
then
correct.
To the U.S. So,
and so unfortunately, we're seeing permanent residents. Never, ever, ever have we had in all the years I've practiced immigration law ever had a concern for a lawful permanent resident traveling and to this extent. So yes, we're advising permanent residents at this time if they don't need to travel. To reconsider and keep their travels stateside. There's just too much unknown at the port of entry that can happen. And so we're also seeing a high rate of decline now for applications for the Sentry program and the Global Travel. Those are programs where individuals who are even U.S. citizens apply for the Global Travel program are being denied.
I was harassed when I got mine when Trump was president the first time over a car that it was funny. My husband applied. He got his. No problem. I went in for my interview and they started when they found out I was a journalist, they started asking me questions like, oh, do you cover migrant caravans or things like that? Immigration issues hadn't been Mexico, but I do cover those issues on this side of the border sometimes. Then they called in a supervisor who wanted to know who said gave me a hard time about a car that I used to own that apparently had been used in a crime. And I said, well, that car was totaled at the scene and towed away by Geico. They took ownership of it. This was during, when the DMV was closed for COVID. I could not get, could not get what they needed from the DMV. I had to get my congressperson and my state legislator involved to get them proof from the DMV that this car had been totaled. But as I pointed out to them, my husband co-owned the same car and you didn't hassle him. I'm clearly being discriminated against based upon my occupation,
Exactly.
And I eventually got it days before my travel, but it was really disturbing to me. And obviously I was born here. I've been a citizen my whole life. So if that could happen to me, it could happen to anybody.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's the Global Entry and Sentry programs. We're getting calls from clients of ours that have naturalized that are being denied those programs on a whim or just because they want to. And so the decline rate, the rejection rate on those two programs now is going up. So that's discouraging.
Let's talk about unoccupied children who came here as
unaccompanied minors.
Unaccompanied minors. Yeah, there was some good news from the courts just a day or so ago where they've come out now and said these children are entitled to representation, I believe. You can probably fill us in a little bit more on what that means. I know we have two centers for unaccompanied children, migrant children, right here in East County that the local authorities have never been able to get access to check on the welfare of these kids in both Lemon Grove and El Cajon. But what can you tell us about that situation?
Well, our office regularly, in fact, my partner, attorney Tiffany Marquis, she regularly handles special immigrant juvenile cases. We call them SIJ cases, where the children have either been abandoned or left behind or whatever, have gone through the program, the situation where they've been housed as unaccompanied minors. And so she's been very successful in doing SIJ programs where we're able to keep the children here under a guardianship program, and then eventually get them a work permit to get a social security number, and then eventually they can immigrate through the SIJ program to permanent residency. So
Oh,
there
that's
are
reassuring.
programs available for the unaccompanied minors. Unaccompanied minors also have a way that they can directly apply for residency, or excuse me, for asylum to the asylum program on
Interesting.
their own. And so we've handled those cases as well. Those are called affirmative asylum applications. So unaccompanied minors do have some special programs available. They obviously need counsel. There are a number of good nonprofit organizations that are kind of specifically dedicated to help unaccompanied minors, and we do work with them from time to time.
Very good. As for adults coming here who have crossed our border, the Trump administration does not seem to be differentiating between those who simply cross the border, undocumented or illegally, versus those who've come here, as so many of them do now, requesting asylum, those who may have been persecuted in their homeland, who are supposed to be entitled to special protections for asylum seekers under international law.
Right.
Can you comment on that?
Sure. I mean, that's the standard problem that we're facing, is that asylees, people who are claiming asylum, are summarily being turned away. The MPP program, the program where they were returned to Mexico, was a dismal, dismal response to
Yes.
asylees coming from Central America. They were placed, returned to Mexico, and lived in these miserable camps with little or no sanitation.
Yeah,
You
they could
should
be
be
preyed on
ashamed.
by criminals down there,
Right. You should be
traffickers.
ashamed of that aspect of the MPP program. I used to see little children in, in court, and it broke my heart to see these things happening. And so yes, I mean, we're turning away people immediately from the borders. They're supposed to be, again, they're supposed to be given an opportunity to have a credible fear interview to determine whether they can establish asylum, bases. But when you just summarily turn someone away, there's nowhere else for them to go. Most of them have given up everything, and many of them have trekked thousands of miles one way and in some form or another to get to our borders.
And could face real danger if they return to their homeland on
Yes.
that
Well,
basis.
most of them can't. Most of them simply wound up, or they wind up back in Mexico, or, and they're not all just coming from Central America. Many of them are Chinese. They're getting to Mexico, and they're coming across, they're trying to immigrate out of China for
Yeah, we've
persecution.
had our reporters go to the border out in Hakamba and interview folks, and they found people there from Turkey. They found a young
Yes.
man from Russia who was fleeing
Yes,
because he
yes. Got a
feared.
lot of Russians when Trump, or excuse me, when Putin started the Ukrainian war and started recruiting, forced recruiting, conscripting the young Russian men. Many, many of them fled Russia, came through Alaska, up through the area, and got into the United States claiming asylum.
Yeah, it's really the whole thing is just heartbreaking. We are almost out of time. Folks, if you tuned in the middle of this, we're speaking with Nora Milner. She is a San Diego-based immigration lawyer with Milner and Markey, who's been doing this since 1987. Nora, I want to get your final thoughts that you would like to leave with our listening audience today. And also, if you could repeat that contact information for anyone who may want to get in touch with you to get on your wonderful email list for information about immigration matters and tips that you offer free of charge, as well as anyone who may actually need a consultation with an immigration lawyer.
Yeah, we're located in the Rancho Bernardo area. Our number is 858-451-6269. And you can also send us information at info, I-N-F-O, at Milner, M-I-L-N-E-R dash Markey, M-A-R-K-E-E dot com. And you can send an email as well. And we will be happy to put you on our electronic bulletin in either Spanish or English at no charge. I guess my final thoughts are for your audience is please don't sit back. Please get active in whatever capacity you can. I'm speaking to a number of Democratic organizations. I've done it in Ramona, in Del Mar. I'm doing one this month in Poway. Please get involved. My belief is, educate each other. And I will like to make a one passing comment. I would like to recommend to your audience a very good book. It's you can get it on Amazon for like $12. It's called A Nation of Immigrants. And you would probably enjoy this, Miriam. It's a paperback. It was written by John F. Kennedy, and it's been updated. And it is a fabulous history of our immigration system from the beginning to updated today with all of the laws and the various ways that our immigration system has evolved. I've used it in teaching my classes in immigration law, and it comes both in Spanish and English. I've also taught these courses in Spanish. So it's called A Nation of Immigrants. It would be very, if you, anybody that
Excellent
reads it
resource.
will know 100% more than the average person on the street about immigration. So it's a good way to become informed and educated. And then also, so inform yourself, learn what's really the truth about immigration, and then please make your voices heard to your representatives. We, as attorneys, we can only do so much. We work within the court system, but the average American citizen can make his or her voice known by getting involved in whatever way you can
Yeah.
in a nonviolent way, because we
Right.
need your help too.
I do have one last question, and that is, what can individuals do to help or support, friends, neighbors, maybe it's your gardener, maybe it's the lady that cleans your house, but if we know folks who may be impacted by this, who may be undocumented or have family members that are undocumented, what kind of help or support or information can we provide to our friends and neighbors?
The first thing to tell them is to please seek qualified counsel. Don't get advice from anybody on the street. Don't get advice from immigration consultants that are not a qualified licensed attorneys. Don't go to notarios.
Yeah,
Seek
social media.
qualified counsel. Seek qualified counsel so that someone can sit down with them and review their situation and see whether there is an opportunity for them to immigrate. And then also tell them to, the purpose of seeking counsel, particularly now, is to determine how to protect themselves in the event they are detained, and then just become aware of how to help people around you. But again, I keep going back to, please get involved. I mean, as attorneys, and particularly me as a litigator, I'm dependent very much on the support of the American people in demanding our rights. If you sit quietly and do nothing, even if you don't want to march on the street, contact your congressman, write a letter, become informed, educate yourself, read
Write a
good
letter to the
books
editor.
about it. Exactly. Listen to programs like yours that are insightful and knowledgeable, and then maybe attend a meeting that maybe you've never done before. But I think all of us are going to have to get involved. Nobody can sit quietly anymore. We are really in uncharted waters, and it's really going to
Absolutely.
be up to us to stand up to this
Are there
situation.
any legal defense funds for immigrants that and others who are, being targeted like this, such as lawful permanent residents? Are there any legal defense funds that the public can donate to that you're aware
Yes,
of?
absolutely. The first one would be the ACLU. They are our prime mover and shaker. They provide us with amicus curiae briefs. They are hugely, hugely important in all of our litigation support, particularly when I go to the Court of Appeals or above. So the ACLU, there's the American Immigration Lawyers Association. They have a litigation unit. There's the Immigration Legal Resource Center, ILRC. They can just Google or go to ChatGPT and ask for a list of nonprofit litigation, defense organizations that they can donate to. But yes, that's another good way. If you don't want to do other things, you can at least donate and put your money. If you take a, instead of spending a latte once a week at Starbucks, then donate that much to an organization that can help these individuals.
Very
Catholic
good.
Charities is also available, and Casa Cornelia. Those are two wonderful local organizations, and the Jewish Family
Family
Center.
Service, Jewish Family Services, yeah.
Yeah, Jewish Family Services. Thank you. Those are all here in the San Diego area.
Very good. Well, we are out of time today, but I really want to thank you, listeners. Again, we've been speaking with Nora Milner, a San Diego-based immigration lawyer with Milner and Markey, speaking about the growing number of issues being faced by immigrants and lawful permanent residents and others under the Trump administration. Nora, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you, Miriam. It's been a pleasure, a privilege. Thank you.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
On Monday, March 24th, civil rights icon Dolores Huerta spoke at a press conference in San Diego. At the conference, Gomez trial attorneys presented a $10,000 check to the Dolores Huerta Foundation and recognized Huerta's contributions to civil rights protections at a time when social justice reforms are under attack. Dolores Huerta is an iconic leader of the farm workers' movement, one of the most influential labor activists of the 20th century, and a leader of the Chicano civil rights movement as well. Experiencing discrimination is what shaped Huerta. She is the recipient of many honors, ranging from an Eleanor Roosevelt Human Rights Award in 1998 to the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2012. As of 2015, she was a board member of the Feminist Majority Foundation, the secretary-treasurer and co-founder of United Farm Workers of America, which she helped co-found along with Cesar Chavez, as well as president of the Dolores Huerta Foundation. Huerta was invited by Shane Harris, a civil rights activist and director of communications at Gomez Trial Attorneys. Harris spoke about the work that Gomez Trial Attorneys has been doing, taking on numerous cases in defense of those who need it most.
I think that it's just really important that we center in on why we're here, right? Gomez Trial Attorneys is not just your ordinary law firm, right? It is not just a law firm, but we are a law firm that believes concretely in the importance of advancing and fighting for civil rights in this community and abroad.
He also spoke about cases where defendants have no other recourse.
We're raising our hand and we're saying we're ready to step up to the plate for those cases that no one else may want to take, to be a voice for the voiceless.
Alongside Harris was the CEO of Gomez Trial Attorneys, John Gomez, one of the most successful trial lawyers in the country. He introduced Huerta and her achievements, illustrating the importance of legal work for those afflicted by racism and deportations under the Trump administration. Gomez, a passionate activist, emphasized the need for action and how much Huerta has influenced many within his firm.
It's time for this community to speak with the strong voice that belongs to it. You know, these are dangerous times, you know, for many. You know, people in their homes or places of business or places of worship. It's not a coincidence that, you know, we still turn to you as our leader. You know, you are our queen, you know, our at the front like Braveheart with your sword out. And so, you know, that's why we're so honored to have you with us and so pleased to present just one small little bit of token of appreciation and support of the work that you do.
The conference also featured a number of other speakers from within Gomez Trial Attorneys, many of whom are part of San Diego's Latino community. Each expressed their gratitude and admiration for Huerta, acknowledging the inspiration she has been for decades. One such lawyer, Perla Cuervas, commented on the personal significance Huerta had in her life.
Her legacy has profoundly shaped my own path. As once an immigrant navigating in a new world, I found strength in her resilience, in her story. As a Latina breaking into spaces not built for me, I found courage in her defiance. And now as a leader, I carry her message forward to my children, ensuring that those that come after me don't just dream of success. They claim it knowing that they deserve it.
Huerta, who took to the mic toward the end of the conference, is a small but mighty speaker. At 95 years old, she continues to command the room and talk clearly and passionately in defense of marginalized communities. Here, she speaks about the focus of her foundation.
The work that we do with the Dolores Huerta Foundation, we work in these communities where we have a lot of people that they don't know what their rights are. They don't know what their privileges are. They don't know that they have the power to change things. And this is what we do. We educate them and make them understand you cannot have a democracy if people do not participate, and that they are going to be victims if they do not participate. And we see that playing out right now in our country.
Alongside the defense of democracy, Huerta touched on a number of other topics. Among these, she expressed her own gratitude for the work the attorneys do, sharing her recent experiences that highlight the need for strong lawyers to defend organizations against government attacks. Huerta, among many things, is a board member for the environmental organization Climate United, which, after receiving a grant from the EPA dedicated to environmental projects focusing on Native American reservations, lost funding from the government under this new administration. Her fellow board members then had FBI agents showing up at their door asking questions regarding their activity within the environmental activist group. She claims that now more than ever, the work that attorneys do is vital in defending activists and their organizations. She shared stories from her past experiences, including those working with Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers of America, where the success of the movement depended on civil rights attorneys defending their right to free speech. Huerta ended the conference with her iconic chant, "Si se puede." Here is the powerful and mighty Dolores Huerta.
So again, thank you very much. And as I said, we will put this money to good use, okay? And we are here to fight the fascism, right? We are here to fight the fascism, and we're going to make it happen. We're going to stop it, and we're going to bring back our democracy. And can I do the chant? Is it okay?
Yes.
I do the chant?
Yes.
Okay. Some of you know the chant, okay? So I ask people to stand up. Everybody stand up. And then I'm going to ask you the two very important questions, and I want you to shout the answer. And it's okay, we shout, right?
Yes.
Okay. But I want you to shout the answer so loud that the haters can hear us, okay? They are, okay? So the first question I'm going to ask you, who's got the power? You're going to say, we've got the power. I'm going to say, what kind of power? You're going to say, attorney power, all right? Okay, let's go. Okay, who's got the power?
We got the power.
Okay, a little bit louder. One more time. Okay, a little bit louder. Okay. Who's got the power?
We got the power.
What kind of power?
Attorney power.
Are we going to use our attorney power to defend our democracy the way that you've been doing? What do we say? Se puede?
Si se puede.
Se puede.
Si se puede.
Okay, let's all do it with an organized hand clap. Let's go.
Si se puede. Si se puede. Si se puede.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Prebo and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.